This is a Power 98.7 podcast. Now we're talking. Subscribe to Power 98.7 podcasts in iTunes or wherever you get your podcasts. There's more on power987.co.za.
It is 8 minutes past 10 in the evening and you're still with myself, Musama Ferechuma, on the Thursday installation of Power Perspective. And as is the nature in this house, they say when you are in Rome, you do what the Romans do. So we're going to continue with that tradition of the last Thursday of the month where we focus on people living with disabilities. And we'll be joined by our resident guest, who is Saul Mulobi, who will allow us to touch on the conversation of today. Good evening, Saul.
Good evening, my dear sister, and good evening to the Power listeners.
Thank you so much for giving us your time again this Thursday to touch on the topic of today.
Yeah, indeed. October, every month in October, every year, I become so conflicted because my birthday is on the 9th of October, but at the same time, the month itself reminds me that it's Cancer Awareness Month and my dad passed on from prostate cancer. My Rangwane, who happens to be my father's younger brother, died from prostate cancer. My other Rangwane, I refuse to call them uncles because uncle refers to Malome, which means my mother's brother. So in this instance, I'm talking about my paternal uncles. Mm-hmm. My other Rangwane died from pancreatic cancer. And my Rakadi, who is my father's sister, died from cancer of the throat. So my family is... Yeah, has a history of cancer. So this being the cancer month, to nurse my stress levels, I partnered with Tato Mulamo Foundation, who are doing cancer awareness campaigns around Gauteng, and I hear that they'll also be taking the campaign nationally. So this month, I'm bringing in someone who got disabled by cancer. I'll see Joyce Pinky Mpandla, who will share with us her harrowing story. Mm-hmm. But also that we will have Dr. Dikeledi Mukoni from the Tato Mulamo Foundation. She is attached to Dr. George Mukari Academic Hospital, who will give medical advice to our listeners.
Thank you so much, Soli, for that introduction and strength to you. You definitely have endured a lot, and it is absolutely amazing and inspirational that you've taken your struggle into an inspirational category of ways or approach of ways to allow us to learn from your life story. Thank you so much, Soli.
Thank you, my dearest sister.
Definitely. Joyce, good evening.
Good evening.
How are you doing?
I'm good, and yourself?
Good, good. Dr. Dikeledi, good evening as well.
Good evening.
Good evening, and thank you so much for giving us your time so we can unpack this conversation. I want to believe as October is, Cancer Awareness Month, we will be, able to sit down and have this conversation from the lens of your experience and the lens of Joyce's experience as well. So thank you so much to the both of you for joining us. I'm going to start with you, Ois Joyce, and maybe just find out what your story has been, especially post-diagnosis, and how you are currently living.
Okay, post-diagnosis, I had to go for chemo. And when I was discharged from the hospital, I was really told that there's a huge possibility that the chemotherapy will not work due to my condition. But thankfully, for the past 3 months, for the first three rounds, everything went well. The fourth round, I started struggling on my fifth round because everything changed. I felt very sick at that moment. I almost gave up because I just couldn't do anything except just to sleep and, couldn't even eat. Then that's when the doctor decided to stop on the fifth round of chemo. So I've been on tamoxifen ever since. It has its side effects, but it's much better than being on chemo. And chemo has already left me with neuropathy on my feet and also on my hands, on my fingers. But so far, everything is going well ever since I stopped the chemo. I'm slowly getting used to my normal life or my new life.
And I mean, it is quite inspirational to learn from someone who has the experience firsthand. But maybe let's track it back a little bit, Joyce, so we can, you know, invite our listeners as well. Let's maybe talk about the type of cancer that you are suffering from.
I'm suffering from breast cancer, and it's a stage 4. It has already spread to the liver and the bones.
So sorry to hear that. And while we're talking about diagnosis, Joyce, let's maybe figure out just briefly how you got to the point of seeking medical help.
I just noticed I had a small lump on my right breast. That was last year, around May, towards end of May. So I just went there to the clinic and they just said, no, it doesn't seem like anything harmful. But then after 2 weeks, still the lump was there. I went back. Then was also told the same thing, that it's nothing. But then she referred me to the hospital. But then I just stayed for a little while before I went to the hospital. I only went to see a doctor around August. And then I was booked for a biopsy in December.
Yes. Continue there. Were you about to continue there?
Is and then when I went to do my biopsy, that's when, you know, the doctor was attending to me, asked why was I not attended earlier on, and then immediately that's when he put me for Friday. It was on a Tuesday when I went. On the 13th, I went back, I did my biopsy, and then I had to get my results in 6 weeks' time. So when I went back in February, that's when I was told that I have cancer, and it was spreading very fast and needed to be put on chemo as soon as possible.
Thank you so much for sharing your experience there, Joyce, so bravely. Dr. Dikeledi, to bring you on here, just piggybacking off of what Joyce just shared, how important is early detection as far as cancer is concerned?
Early detection of cancer, any cancer, especially breast cancer, is very important because we have different stages. As she has mentioned, we have what is called stage 0, which is what is called a carcinoma in situ. It's a cancer that has not yet, it's not a, what cannot say, very early cancer. Then invasive cancer, we have stage 1, stage 2, 3, and 4, where stage 4 is cancer now that has metastasized to different organs like the lungs, the bones, the liver, is the last stage. It's not curable. And then we have locally advanced, which is stage 3. Then we have stage 1 and stage 2, where now we consider that early breast cancer, stage 1 and stage 2A. It is said to be curable, but the curable is in inverted commas, because when you assess the patient and you say it's early breast cancer, by then the cells might be in the blood on their way to go now and be planted on these organs. So you never show when you say it's early breast cancer. But as I said, early breast cancer is said to be curable, and the survival rate of breast cancer is according to stages, where if you have a patient with stage 0, the 5-year survival is 100%, and for stage 1 is around 93%, stage 1 and stage 2. And when you go to stage 4 now, it's about around 22%.
Thank you so much for that, doctor. But while we're still talking about, you know, just general awareness of what, you know, what cancer is and how it works, let's talk about benign versus malignant tumors and, you know, what the dangers are of either side of the diagnosis, as well as if it's possible for someone on their own personal capacity to discern what kind of cancer they have.
Okay. We start with the first one. What is the difference between benign and malignant tumors? Malignant tumors are what we call cancers. Cancers are what we call malignant tumors. benign tumors are tumors that do not spread. They are not cancerous. They do not, and they don't spread. They might grow in size and be big, but they do not spread. And if they are excised, there is no risk of malignancy. Whereas when we talk of malignant tumors, is when now we talk of cancer. Cancer, which is like, what can I say? It's like a parasite and a crest. It grows locally. It invades local structures. It grows into your local structures, and then it spreads. And when it spreads, it can spread to the axilla, to the lymph nodes. And it can also spread by blood to different organs. So cancer kills. Malignant tumors, they can kill, but benign tumors are not, benign tumors do not kill. Although there's what we call locally advanced benign tumors that can recur, but they do not kill per se, if I can just simplify it.
Can I chip in there? After having spoken to us, Joyce, I think the problem is that the nurses in hospitals are not very familiar about the differences between the two. Because when she first went to hospital with the lump, she was just told that, don't worry, it's just a simple lump. It will go away.
Mm-hmm.
And then 6 weeks later, she went and they still said, don't worry, it's not moving, no problem. And by the time she had to go and see the doctor, because all along she was only talking to the nurses, by the time she was seeing the doctor got very worried and said that, in fact, they've wasted time. They could have attended to her then, and the cancer wouldn't have spread as much as it did. And this is what nearly killed us, Joyce, because she was saying she spotted the problem earlier. She went to hospital, but they just dismissed her.
And thank you so much for adding that, adding to that, Saul, because I think this then begs the question or the concern around how equipped our local and immediate health service providers can help us as far as these cancers are concerned. But Dr. Dikeledi, while I still have you on that one, are the treatments of these two different types of cancers or tumors rather, are the treatments different?
Yes, the treatments are different, and even how the patients present. It can, it's different because cancers tend to grow fast in size,
mm-hmm.
whereas benign tumors, they grow slow. And then again, cancers tend to invade, as I said, local structures. So the cancers can grow and invade the skin, and then you can have skin changes, alteration, but that is in advanced cancer. And then whereas benign tumors usually do not invade the skin, the local structures, unless they are so big that they cause what is called pressure necrosis on the skin.
Mm.
So there is a different way in which these present. And we also ask the patient, when they come to the clinic, we take what is called history. We'd ask the patient certain questions like, okay, how fast is this growing? How long have you been having this? And then, do you have any family history of breast cancer? So those things will just suggest as to, is this a benign condition or a malignant condition? Then from there, we go and investigate. At that time, we'll say, okay, we suspect that this is cancer or this is benign. Then from there, we go and do investigations like our mammogram. The mammogram, again, will suggest, there are features on the mammogram that will suggest that this is a malignancy now, a cancer. Then still, we are not yet sure until we do a biopsy. The final one that confirms is the biopsy. And then, I was going to continue to answer the first question.
Mm-hmm.
Yes. So if I understand, I don't know, did she come straight to the hospital or did she start at the clinic?
I started at the clinic. I went twice at the clinic before I went to the hospital.
Okay, okay. So there are two factors here. The first thing is that, maybe at the clinic, they might have delayed. I think at the clinic, they thought it was a fibroadenoma because, you know, breast cancer, the risk of breast cancer also increases with age. So if you see a young patient, the index of suspicion for breast cancer is lower compared to an elderly patient because breast cancer is more common in elderly patients. Although there is a trend, an increase in incidence of breast cancer in young black females, both here we see that and also in America. So I think the sisters, they thought it's a fibroadenoma, which is a benign condition. So there might have been a delay there, and then she also delayed herself going to the hospital. And also in the hospital, there was also a delay because in the hospital, what we have now, we have a problem with resources because there are more patients compared, in proportion to the resources that we have. So now they tend to be, the time, prolonged time, as to the first diagnosis of the patient and commencement of the treatment. Because the first time the patient comes, we'll assess the patient. The doctor will assess the patient. Then from there, there are some cases where you say, no, this is cancer. Mm. Okay, you do clinical examination. The others will say, okay, I think it's cancer, or no, I think this is more benign condition. But still, we then investigate the patient. So the problem is, there are many patients. So when we book, the patient goes and books, and then the date that the patient gets, for instance, of doing a mammogram, the patient gets a date that is later, and then maybe then the communication, there's a communication breakdown maybe even between the patient and the doctor. Maybe the doctor didn't emphasize that, come back to me and show me what date did they give you for mammogram. So that now, whilst you are waiting for that mammogram, you can just biopsy the patient. Because rightfully, we're supposed to start with a radiological investigation before we do a biopsy. But practically, sometimes if we see that the radiological investigations like mammogram are booked, maybe they are far, we can start with the biopsy. And then with the biopsy as well, we have to wait because she says 6 weeks for the biopsy. So there's also a delay also in the system, in the working of the patient. So in this case, I think it was all parties. In the clinic, there was a delay. The patient herself delayed, and then she comes to the hospital. There's also a delay.
Which is quite unfortunate with the potential combination of these factors where a sensitive issue is being dealt with. But Osdrace, I would want to hear from you on two things that the doctor has mentioned here. One is that you know there's different stages at which one could be diagnosed and what the implications therefore are. And in your case, your diagnosis was at stage four. Also the fact that we see these kinds of diagnosis in older women, and considering your age, that could have been a little bit of a shock for you. What was your experience with the diagnosis you received, as well as considering how old you are?
I was very scared because at the time I was in the hospital, I also noticed that most of the women who I was with, they were most older people. Mm-hmm. And but I've also noticed that there's a lot of young people as well, because at George Mukhari, when I started there, the clinic is almost full every day. And then I came here to Barra as well. Yeah, it's more younger people are becoming very aware of this, of cancer, and they are trying to get help.
I mean, I'm really impressed with your bravery around your diagnosis and your recovery journey. But while I still have the three of you, Dr. Dikeledi, I want us to touch a little bit on, the restoration of dignity of people who have survived breast cancer, be it through how people qualify for reconstructive surgery or what form of therapies exist for people who have survived breast cancer.
Okay, in the management of a breast cancer patient, we have what you call multidisciplinary teams. So as a doctor, as me, Dr. Dikeledi, I'm not supposed to be treating the patient alone.
Mm-hmm.
So the patient, we have a team that consists of the surgeon, who is the main physician of the patient. Then there are the radiologists, the ones who take the x-rays, the pathologists who do the biopsies, and then we have the other auxiliary departments. We need to have clinical psychologists, physiotherapists, you know, so it's a lot of people involved. Now, with that team, the team is supposed to treat the patient. For instance, we make a diagnosis. What we do, we investigate the patient as surgeons. Then from there, we have a multidisciplinary team where now we discuss the patient. So we'll discuss the clinical state of the patient, the x-rays, and then different departments will come in, and then even the plastic surgeons will be there, the reconstructive plastic and reconstructive surgeons. Mm-hmm. And then before we start treating this patient, we have to decide on the management. If this patient is going to start with, if it's an early breast cancer, we're going to start with surgery. And then with surgery, if it's an early breast cancer, the patient might need immediate reconstruction, because when we reconstruct, if it's early breast cancer, we can do it immediately on the setting, the day of the surgery, or it can be delayed reconstruction that is done after. That is for early breast cancer. Then if it's locally advanced, that is, it's a stage 3, which has not metastasized distantly. It's a patient who must start by getting chemotherapy, and then from there they are going to have surgery, radiotherapy. Sometimes the tumors might not be operable. They just go for radiotherapy. So in that case, it will depend. The reconstruction now will be discussed after the surgery and after the other treatment. And then for stage 4 disease, usually, we don't really talk about reconstruction for stage 4, unless the patient has only bone metastasis. If the patient has bone metastasis, then you can individualize, because the survival for a patient with bone metastasis only is better than a patient who has now visceral metastasis, which is now the tumor has spread to the lungs, the liver, the brain. So with a multidisciplinary team, we're supposed also to be having what are called medical oncologists, because the chemotherapy is supposed to be given by medical oncologists. It's only that in other centers like ours, it's given by the surgeon. We don't have an oncology department, radiation oncology, and also radiation oncology. So those are the people who discuss the patient. So these patients are supposed to be referred rightfully. When the patient, you know, hears the news, when you are breaking the news to the patient is supposed to, the clinical psychologist is supposed to be there, or you refer the patient immediately. Because we as doctors, we also supposed to counsel the patient, but because of the load, because he has mentioned that the clinic is full, so we tend not to, you know, to have that time of the way we break the news. It's not like to the patient. It's not like a clinical psychologist. So the clinical psychologist can spend an hour or 2 hours with the patient and also ask the patient about the fears and all that. And then patients are also supposed to be counseled rightfully before, also about when you're going to get chemotherapy, chemotherapy has side effects and all that, the surgery, the complications of surgery, you know. So the multidisciplinary team is for that. But, and then also, as I've mentioned, reconstruction. But sometimes now in real life, in reality, it's now because of some challenges, like as I've mentioned before, resources, including even human resource, you know, constraints. You might find that now that is not followed as it's supposed to be.
Mm-mm. We definitely hear you there, doctor, and it's really informative to know that these options do exist to the patients that you are consulting with. So, as we close this conversation, do you believe that we are doing enough to spread awareness. I understand October itself has been used, I want to believe even on just this platform alone, has been used quite expansively to spread these messages of awareness, you know, messages of positivity towards people suffering from cancer. But do you believe that us as a community in general are doing enough to conscientize people?
You know what? I don't think there'll ever be enough. Mm-hmm. It's not enough, but I've seen an improvement. I think people are doing their best because even the patients, the survivors, understand. Even in Soshanguve, there are some patients who are showing me pictures. They, you know, they collaborated with other community members, and then they had some breast awareness day and all that. And even in the hospital, they usually organize a breast awareness day, but it's only one, you know, in October. Rightfully, we're supposed to be having platforms like this frequently. But now, on the other hand, what is depressing is we conscientize the community. Then the community does come and consult. Then from there, still, there are other now challenges after they consult. You understand? So that is sort of also, you know, I don't know.
I mean, it's definitely some effort. You're right there, doctor. But let's Saul give us his opinion.
Yeah. The reason why I'm impressed with Aus Joyce is that when she noticed the problem, she went to a clinic. Usually, and it has also happened in my own family, they will then attribute this to witchcraft. And then there was also a moral issue, particularly with my dad, where he felt that he couldn't discuss matters of the prostate with his children, mm-hmm. even though I was old already and I even had my own children. Mm-hmm. At first he said he suffered from kidney failure, and it was only later that our Rangwane called us aside and said, "You didn't hear this from me, but your dad has prostate cancer." And usually by the time we go to seek proper medical attention, you'll find that it's already late. That's why I love this awareness campaign, because it is also directed at ordinary people, particularly your taxi drivers, who are most vulnerable to the disease, as you guys discussed this a few days ago. So we need to be harping on this campaign almost every week to say to people, you need to be aware of cancer. These are the symptoms, and guys should regularly go for testing, prostate cancer testing, and women should also go for breast cancer testing every year, so that ultimately we are able to contain the spread of this disease.
Definitely, and so that we can, again, like Dr. Dikeledi said, focus on early detection. That way we can deal with the disease much sooner and much more effectively. So thank you so much for giving us your time this evening.
Okay, thank you. Just to say that since November 3 to December 3, we are celebrating Disability Rights Awareness Month. So this program will be going weekly from next week for the next 4 weeks. Thank you so much for the opportunity.
We appreciate you. Aus Joyce, thank you so much as well for giving us your time and sharing your experiences. We pray that you stay strong.
Thank you for having me.
Definitely. Dr. Dikeledi, thank you as well for giving us your time and your insight.
You're welcome, and thank you also. I'm honored to be part of the, you know, the panel. Thank you so much.
Definitely. That was a panel of people with experiences, both either with the disease or people around them who have had the disease. And I appreciate that we are here to have this conversation so we can destigmatize cancer in general. It is quite heartbreaking that we cannot have these open conversations.
You've been listening to a Power 98.7 podcast. For more podcasts, visit power987.co.za or subscribe wherever you get your podcasts.